Session number 27345, Reel 5.
Reel 5.
I used to master at 8 o'clock in the morning for duties. Wash it, polish this, so forth. But then I was very fortunate. I was called Blue Eyes because I'd only been on the ship about 7 or 8 months. And I was taken under the wing of the bosun's mate. And I became one of the bosun's mate's side party. There were 4 men, which was a lovely job. You was excused dressing up to enter and leave your harbour. You never had to know. And you always looked after the side. You know, any dirt and scratching, rust or anything, you was over the side and you were painting it. And of course I was the boy jumper. I became the boy jumper. Because I was rather small. I know I'm nearly 6 now, but I only just managed to get through the actual height when I joined up. And I gradually increased. But anyway, I was small and tubby. And I was made boy jumper. And there were 2 ways of getting on the boy. You either went in the captain's jolly boat, and he used to take her up to the boy, and you jump on the boy. And the other way was they used to lower you over the forecastle with a
harness?
Yes. And drop you on the boy. And, of course, you'd stay on the boy, up she'd come. You'd read the slip wire through and tighten up, and down would come the cable, and you'd fix the cable. And then you'd be hauled up. And I enjoyed doing that. I thoroughly enjoyed doing it, because have you seen the boys in Sheerness and that? When the boys in Sheerness are much bigger than this, completely round, you could sit and lay on them. They were good. The only naughty ones I found were the one in Norway, which will come later. And so I became side party, and I was quite happy about that.
When you were out in the Mediterranean, you said you were excused, to dress up. What would you be wearing?
Overalls.
All the time?
Yeah. Well, you wore overalls when you was at sea and things like that. You weren't in dress of the day. You wore overalls most of the time. And but when you was entering harbour, you had to go down, and you had to get in your... Not your tiddlies, but your number twos, hat and everything else. Or, if it was tropical, into your tropical uniform.
And what would that have been when you were in the Mediterranean? What would you be wearing when you were entering?
Shorts. Shorts and shirts.
Would they be white?
Yes, yes. And your shoes were white and everything was white. Your hat was white as well. Everything was white. We used to have a Jimmy, first lieutenant on the Ivanhoe. He used to take rounds... on a Saturday with a pair of gloves on. White gloves. As he'd walk along, he'd go like that. And if they were dirty, that was it. They had to be cleaned. Always wore gloves. But he was a wonderful man, our first lieutenant. I can't think of his name now. I think it was Phipps or Phillips. His father was in the Foreign Office, and he had plenty of money. And he supplied the whole of the mess deck with cushions to sit on. Proper cushions, not navy cushions, you know, where they're that thin and they just stay on top like a bit of caucasine. He had proper cushions made, and we had nice cushions. He was a great man, same as our skipper. I think the name of the skipper. The name is sort of... lose me at times. I think his name was Commander Haydo. Marvellous man. Good man. He told us everything what we were doing.
In the Ivanhoe, what's the hierarchy with the officers down to where you were as a boy jumper? How does it work in a destroyer?
You come down captain, first lieutenant, then you become the officers, lieutenants, who would take over, who would do the watch, you see. Then you come down lower to bosun. And that's a one-ringer. and then you would come to chief petty officers. Petty officers, leading hands, able seamen, ordinary seamen. Ordinary seamen, the lowest of the low.
So on a destroyer, what is the captain's role then?
Well, his role is, if you go into action, he will take charge straight away. And of course, weather-wise, if you wanted to turn, if for example, we went through the Bay of Biscay one time on spring manoeuvres, and it blew a gale. And people seem to think the Bay of Biscay doesn't get very rough. But believe you or me, the Bay of Biscay is one of the roughest places in the world when it blows in the right direction. And if you want to turn on an angle of, say, 45 degrees, or even if you want to turn round, the captain had to be there because everything had to be battened down. The ships would be turning in so many minutes, batten everything down. Because you would, now you're, as you turn into the wave, you're going to get yourself like that, and you can go over. I was on the Ivan Hearn at one time. We did a 40 degree roll, which is practically over. 49's the one I think that's been was known in the Navy at the time as the biggest roll they'd ever known. But we did nearly a 40, because being like, you're like a little cork, and when it blows, you get your waves come up here, and they are 30 and 40 foot waves, and you're down in the trough, you know, going through it, and you look, oh my God, there's this wall of water there. And now, that's all right if you're going with it that way. If you're going head into it, well, you're up there. 1 minute, or not 1 minute, 1 minute, about 10 seconds, you're up there, and the next minute, there's nothing beneath it, and you're, woof, down you go again. And everything has to be battened down, and God knows what. No cooking done, only hot water, and you was on hardtack.
So the captain takes control, obviously, in the
he
situation.
He has control of all the ship.
On a day-to-day routine, though, is he bothered to be just cruising or patrolling? Would the captain be really in command then? Or
oh, yes, he would come up onto the bridge. Oh, yes. It would be when we get to the Courageous, you'll know when the captain comes in a bit.
So you, as a boy seaman, what kind of relationship would you have on the Ivan Hearn with the captain? Would you see him? Would you talk to him? Would he talk to
you? Oh, no. He would look at you and ask you your name and how old you were and what you were doing. But you didn't have a lot of contact with the captain. Very little contact with the captain. Only if you were on the bridge. Then you were spoken to a lot more. But working or over the side, no.
What about the first lieutenant? What's
now, he would be on... He would have the pitch of everything. He would know everything that is going on. What parties they're doing. Washing down, washing paintwork, and all this sort of business. Or instructions. You'd have instructions on seamanship. And because then, as I did get attached a little bit to the torpedo party, and they used to be running the checks on all the circuits and everything else. Everything was tested more or less on a day-to-day basis. And then you'd have your officer to watch on the quarter deck if you was in the harbour. With a quartermaster, and he would know what was happening, because he'd want to know what was happening in case a boat came alongside, or the captain wanted to go ashore, or something like that.
On a destroyer, how many officers would you have, really?
I think we had a complement of somewhere around about torpedo, 1, 2, 3, 4, 12, 15, all knew their jobs, all knew their jobs.
And they would have a specific role with those officers?
You would have the... ERA, petty, engine room artificer, he would be a petty officer, a chief petty officer. Then you would have the, a lot of petty officers would be there, but officers, you'd have one for the ERA, you'd have one for the guns, you'd have one for the torpedoes, then you'd have one for the general running of the ship, and then you'd have others for watchkeeping. But they were all on the Ivan Hearn. I never come across the paper.
I was going to say, what was the kind of relationship, because this is pre-war, isn't it?
Yes.
With the Navy, and What were the kind of relationships between the ship's crew and the officers?
Very good, very good. But you kept your distance. You were the crew. They were the officers. They were the ones who your life depended on. Because they had to know their job, know what they were doing. I mean, when you went to sea, you'd have the navigator charting out everything. And he would be a lieutenant. And you depended upon him where you were going, and he wasn't going to hit any rocks or something like that, you see.
What about the petty officers? What were their roles?
Their roles were in charge of guns, barrels of guns, the torpedo tubes, and all various other parts. We had a petty officer as a doctor, as a sick berth attendant on board, and he was very good. And the petty officers would be there to take divisions and so forth and such, which. And your leading hands would be there as the party, a party if you were going to wash the side of the ship. They would be in charge of that. But overall, on washing the side of the ship, will come the bosun's mate side party.
So it sounds to me like cleanliness aboard the ship was important in that pre-war period. That
cleanliness was essential, was vital. Because you lived there. It was your home. And if any man didn't have a shower now and again, or quite often, and didn't have a shower and he began to smell, you would take him to, or the leading hand of the mess would take him to one side and have words, and if he persisted, well, he could have gone into the shower and been scrubbed. And he wouldn't be smelling anymore after he'd been scrubbed, I assure you, because then the scrubbing brushes in the Navy were scrubbing brushes. They were, the bristles were about that big, and they were hard. Like that, because they were meant to hold.
About 2 inches long?
Yeah. Oh, no. Somewhere about 6 to 8 inches long, like that, and about 2 inches wide.
And how long were the bristles, though?
And then the bristles would be a good inch long. Oh, yes. If you see, when he was clean, or if he was sick, sometimes when you went to sea, you met a drop of roughers. Not everybody wasn't seasick, but there were the people that were seasick and couldn't. And once you felt sick, you had to let it come up, because there used to be some very funny boys on board ship sometimes, and they knew who was a bit shaky at first till they got their sea legs, and they would. And at meal time, if you was on anything fat, they would deliberately hold the fat in front of you and things like that, you know, just joking and all things apart.
How did you take to going to sea? Did you suffer from seasickness at
all? No, 40 enough now, touch wood. Very good. I'm a very good sailor. I was quite happy. Mark you, sometimes I was scared, especially when you hit rough weather.
When the ship was in the Mediterranean, obviously you were patrolling, but was the turnout of the ship itself
spick and span, spot on?
And would there be competition with other ships?
Oh yes. It was the best looking ship, sort of been the cleanest and everything else, because you had your half leader and your leader, Captain D of destroyers. He was the leader of the flotilla, and then you had the half leader. The leader had two rings around his funnel, and the half leader had one around his funnel. You see?
And at that point, was the atmosphere on destroyers different from larger ships?
Oh, yes. Sometimes in Alexander and Jib and places like that, the big ones would be alongside, and you'd tie up alongside of them. And that's when the banter used to start. You tie up a battleship or alongside a cruiser, you see. And of course, you'd be down here, and the battleship or the cruiser would be up there. Oh, wouldn't be on that little thing. No, won't be on that bloody great thing either. You know, it was banter all the time. Because there was no doubt about it. They say that, I've never experienced it, but the role on the big ones, like the Hood and the Repulse, the big battle weapons, was horrible. She used to, in rough weather, she used to lift, and she'd stay like that for a couple of minutes and all of a sudden, there she'd go, and that's it. And when she went on a roll, she'd been on a roll for about a minute or so, because she was so ponderous, you see. And then she'd come back again, and it was so slow, but with a destroy, it's like that. First you're that way, then you're that way. You're holding on tight, you've got your feet jammed up against somebody. In the mess deck, you're jammed up against the table, because the table is bolted to the deck. And if it was rough, you'd be sitting there.
It's often said there's a more relaxed atmosphere on a destroyer than a larger
battleship. Oh, yes. Much more, because you knew everybody. You knew everybody aboard a destroyer, but a battleship. There were men there you never even saw sometimes. So I believe. I can't say, because I never spent any time on big ones. And I didn't want to at the time. I was quite happy being destroyers.
Was that the feeling amongst most of the people who were on board destroyers? Did they enjoy service aboard destroyers
rather
than larger ships?
Yes.
You've mentioned, obviously, the officers and what they did in their roles and some of the things about the branches that they were in charge of. What kind of other trades did you have on board the ship?
Well, if you take the torpedoman, you had the seaman torpedoman, which, to be initiated as a seaman torpedoman, you had to go through the tubes and grease the tubes. Yeah, they used to take the torpedo out, and of course it had to be greased. And if you was a nice skinny one like I turned out to be eventually, your turn to go through there, and you go through in a pair of bathing trunks, and you'd be greasing the around. Then there was the leading torpedo operator. He was the one in charge of all the he was the torpedo man to fire, and then you'd build all the electrical circuits would come under him. All these circuits, electrical circuits, batteries, everything electrical were coming, except the air sticks, the anti-submarine detecting gear. They were a class of their own. They were men of their own. Because they were always tucked away in that little cupboard, in that little place downstairs, soundproof, and you couldn't hear anything. And that was that branch. Then you would have the LTO low power. Now, he was the kingpin. He was the man in charge of all gunnery circuits, being low power. Because normal power on board is 110 volts. But circuits for guns is 22 volts. And that was a special... You had to go and qualify for LTO low power, because it was a special part, a special branch. Then you'd have the torpedo gunner's mate. He'd been all through all the lot, so he was in charge of the lot. And then you would have the electrical officer. He would be able to lock.
So the torpedo branch actually looked after the ship's electrics at that point.
The torpedo branch were responsible for everything electrical and by battery.
What about the gunnery branch? What would that
the
be?
The gunnery branch, you'd have your gunnery men, gun layers, and all that sort of business. And they would be all in there. Normal way. I don't know much about what the actual. There was the gun layout. You all come under one sort of branch, the gunnery branch, but you did the different. You were the breechman. You were the actual firing it. You loaded the guns and all this sort of business.
So but would there be a layer and a loader and somebody in charge of the gun?
Yeah.
What was the armament aboard the Ivanhoe?
The Ivanhoe consisted of 4 4.7 guns. And 2 banks of 5 torpedo tubes, and in between the 2 funnels were the aircraft, anti-aircraft, and the guns they had. I don't know what the guns were. They were .5s, and they were in banks of like that. Banks of 4, and they used to be on a band of .5 guns, ammunition shells. Quite big shell, and they were the anti-aircraft ones.
What about the engine room branch? How many people?
Now, the engine room, you'd have stokers of various branches, first class stoker, second class stoker, leading stoker, petty officer stoker. Then you'd have the engine room artificers, the ERAs as we call them. They would be responsible for the running of the engine room, and they would be first class men, real tradesmen. And you would have, they would be all ERAs, electrical engineering artificers. and then you'd have your signal branch. Signal branch was an entirely different section altogether. Even had their own mess. The torpedo men had their own mess. The signalmen had their own mess. The stokers had their own mess. And all the LTOs and gunnery ratings and everything else was all mixed in the main mess.
And you would have an ordinary seaman's branch, would you, on there, who would just do the running of the ship?
Well, ordinary seamen, there weren't many ordinary seamen on there. You didn't stay an ordinary seaman very long. I think I stayed an ordinary seaman 6 months, then I was made into an able seaman. And you all become able seamen then.
I was meaning more in the line, there was a seamen's branch, was there, as well, on board? Who would?
Oh, yes, a seamen's branch, yes.
Are they involved with just the day-to-day kind of running of the ship, rather than
and also in action stations and everything like that, you see. My action station was down the shell room at first, but then I got attached to the torpedo branch.
And did you have a ship's carpenter or somebody like that on board a destroyer? No. Would that be on the larger ones?
Big ones did. But our bosun's mate was an expert at splicing and all wires and ropes. He was an expert at that. And of course, that's what you used to do as a side party. Although you looked after the cleanliness of the side, the upper the superstructure was all looked after by the able seamen and everybody else. The party was working during the course of the day. And as I said, the side party was responsible for the ship side and the pennants. And also, if you was anchoring, you lift, and when you weighed anchor, they were responsible for cleaning the anchor, because you would be the one on the hosepipe washing the anchor down as it come up and the cable. And if you didn't do it properly, the bosun's mate would be after you. You see? But, and that's how it used to be. But everybody knew everybody.
And what was the atmosphere like? I'm thinking of this period while you were patrolling the Palestinian.
Well, I thought the atmosphere was great. I suppose being a teenager, because as I've said, the Navy thinks you're a man with the age of 18, but you're not. You're still a teenager. And you still get scared. I got scared. Once. I don't mind admitting it. And but the actual camaraderie amongst everybody was good. It wasn't bad at all.
And the weather conditions, because obviously you mentioned the Bay of Biscay being rough. Mm. Why are you in the Mediterranean? Can that get rough?
Well, yes, in the Mediterranean, but you used to go in the bay for exercise, if you see. You go in the bay for exercise, because you had all the bay to play with.
Oh, so what were your exercises? What would that really entail, ships?
Oh, that would entail battleships, going into battle, and destroyers, attacking, and everything like that. And you would fire dummy torpedoes. Oh, yeah, so you'd fire dummy torpedoes, and you recovered them, because they cost a lot of money. But and once they struck the ship and you made a hit, the propeller used to hit there and stop, and it used to float to the surface. It would break the circuit inside, and it would release the compressed air, fill the head of the dummy torpedo up, and then a red flare would start, and you'd be able to pick it up.
So these exercises in the Mediterranean, the Bay of Biscay, would they entail then some part of the Navy playing the enemy?
That's right. Oh, yes. And then you'd have your gunnery practice and everything like that. You'd go to sea, and you'd have this tug tying a target. Right. And the gunnery boys would have a go. Yeah. Oh, yes, you were kept on your toes. You did quite a lot of exercises, and of course you had quite a lot of times of action stations, how long it took you to close completely up and all this sort of business.
What times were you getting them down to in those exercises? Well,
if the buzzer went and you was on the bridge and I had to get down into the shell room, it'd take me about 2 minutes, because everybody would be, you know, as you're coming down the ladder, nobody would be coming up, and they let you come down first because they knew you was off somewhere. And that's how. And we used to get down to the shell room and close up by about 2 minutes from the bridge. But then I got off. Then they took me off the action stations, and they put me on action stations with the attached to the torpedo party.
That's quite interesting, because obviously, what is the role of a destroyer?
The role of the destroyer is to antagonise the battleship by darting in and out and doing a swift torpedo attack. He would be up to full speed, and he would be firing his guns. But if the distance was too far, gave the impression that you were a fighting ship. If you follow me, you see, and then you dart in and you loose your torpedoes, and then you dart out, and that's how it used to go.
So were you used on destroyers to quite violent manoeuvres?
Oh yes. Oh yes, you'd be going on. But because when you went on exercise, you had made sure everything was battened down first for quick manoeuvres, and you could be going along at 30 knots. We were capable of doing 36 knots, we were. When the third boiler was connected up, we could do 36 knots. And you'd be doing 30 knots, and all of a sudden you'd go hard a starboard, and you'd vroom, vroom. Yes. Oh yeah, high-speed manoeuvres. Because that was the object of the destroyer. To attack the battle, the enemy, the fleet, by darting in and darting. You were pinpricking all the time, if you understand me. You know, making yourself a nuisance. We were called the Greyhound.
What was the ethos in the Navy at that time? Although you were just doing exercises, what is the Navy ethos for attacking the enemy? Is it always to engage them closely?
Oh, yeah. It's always ready to go in, too. And you get your instructions. Because if you was with the just the flotilla of destroyers, Captain D would issue the instructions. But if you was in contact with cruisers and battleships, you would get your information from them.
And did you get any feedback on how you were doing in these exercises?
Oh yes, we used to find out that if we did well, or if we were poorly, and all that sort of thing. I must say it myself, but I think that the I boats were pretty clever. They kept up to the name of the destroyer, which what they were.
Now, obviously, while you were in the Mediterranean, you said you went ashore at Alexander.
Yes.
Did you get ashore anywhere else as well? Did you go ashore at Haifa?
I went to school in Haifa. Because as I was just turned 18, we still had to go to school. And we went to an army school. Actually, there were about 8 of us on board. And we went to school twice a week when we was in harbour. 4 hours in the morning, every morning, yeah.
And what were you being instructed in?
English, arithmetic. All sorts of things, you know.
Because it sounds like the Navy took a great interest in boys' education.
And the boys' education, if you was a young tiddler like I was, your education was also well to the fore. And if there was any educational classes going in Malta, you went. And that's it. But it made a break sometimes, because you went somewhere different.
So what were your impressions when you went ashore of Haifa and Palestine?
Well, I thought Haifa was very, very clean at the time. And I thought it was a very well-kept town. The harbour was good. And as all towns like Palestine and Alexandria and all that, there was plenty of sand and so forth, you know. But, no, I was quite impressed to a certain... And in actual fact... I was rather proud to walk along sometimes in a naval uniform. I'm a sailor. You know, being a teenager, you've got a little bit sort of cocky with yourself. I'm proud to be walking along. But I think if I was a sailor now, Richard, I would not be proud to walk along. Because I think what's been happening to our forces is despicable. That's all I can say.